This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. After World War II, the United States decided that instead of building its own research facilities and buildings, it would carry out those studies at the nation's universities, and the government would pay for indirect costs of the grants to support things like operations, maintenance. But the Trump administration and Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency decided to limit reimbursement to 15%, far below what universities have received in the past. Here's what a professor at Northwestern University told the PBS NewsHour.
Hi, my name is Carol LeBon, and I am a professor of molecular biosciences at Northwestern University. In science, you can think of direct costs as when specific to a particular research project, the chemicals and the cells and the salaries of the researchers. But then there are the indirect costs of maintaining and replacing equipment, ordering, bookkeeping, handling hazard waste, and compliance with government regulations. So take any particular area of research you want, let's say pediatric cancer. This would amount to a 15 to 20% decrease in funding for studying that.
As of this morning, a judge has put that limit on hold, but there is already fallout at universities throughout Illinois. Joining us is Megan Zanies, who's a senior reporter with the Chronicle of Higher Education, who's been covering some of these issues. Megan, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Dr. Donald Torrey. He's a PhD microbiologist and an immunologist. He's also associate dean for research at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. Don, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can join us today again at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Megan, I'm going to start with you. We know the National Institutes of Health cut funding to universities, hospitals, and other research centers across the U.S. Where do things stand right now?
Right, so right now, as you said, there is a nationwide temporary restraining order on this that actually came down last week, which means that for now, funds are being paid out as usual. There's no 15% cap. Researchers largely have been told continue on business as usual until we hear otherwise. And there's actually a hearing scheduled for Friday, so we could have more news then.
The first time Trump was in office, he tried and failed to get Congress to cut the indirect cost rate to, I think it was 10%. What makes what we're seeing out of this second Trump administration different this time around, Megan?
That's right. It was in 2017 there was a 10% cap proposed. We don't have a ton of insight into how this particular policy was crafted, but we do know also that Project 2025, which is the conservative policy blueprint that we've heard a lot about, also targets indirect costs. And they've actually tied it to DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, as sort of a reason for doing so. The rationale that we've heard in the NIH announcement is that this aligns with typical overhead rates that you might see in the private sector. A lot of academics, and I'm sure other folks can speak to this, have said this is sort of an apples and oranges comparison. Cost structures are totally different between academia and the private sector, and therefore that might be not a fair comparison to make.
All right, well, let's get specific then. Donald Torrey, I'll bring you into the conversation now. So how does NIH funding normally get to the SIU School of Medicine?
Sure. So it's a very competitive process. We have faculty that have those good ideas, and they develop a proposal to submit to NIH. And mind you, that can take months, if not years, of getting sufficient preliminary data to be competitive at that national level. Much of that initial funding comes from internal sources that universities use to support their faculty when they join, with the goal of them developing their research program, maturing it so that they're competitive at that national level. Once proposals are submitted, they're reviewed typically by a panel of scientific experts related to that field. This is referred to as a study section at NIH. And there can be 15 to 20, maybe 25 experts on that panel. And each application then is scored on several criteria based on the merit of the science and, in addition, the significance of the problem, innovation. Is this project going to move the needle in terms of pushing forward our knowledge base in different diseases. And I'll speak more to biomedical research since that's what we do here. Very competitive. I would say on average, maybe 1 out of 10 applications are funded. So one must have a really good idea and project outlined to be able to get those funds from NIH. Once awarded, as we've talked about, the funds come into two different places. One is a direct funds, which, as the name suggests, are those that support the performance of the research project directly. And these would include salaries for research technicians, stipends for graduate students and postdoctoral fellows to train that next level or next gen of scientists and physician scientists. It covers the reagents, the biological supplies, other things that we've heard about, the proper disposal of those supplies and biological supplies that are needed, equipment, as well as some of the analytical, sophisticated analytical programs that are needed.
And then, I'm gonna actually pause here, and then we will leave that as a tease, because that sounds like that's the direct funding, right? The microscopes, the chemicals, and the biological agents, the staff salaries, and then we'll get to the indirect funding. We need to take a break. When we return, we are talking about attempting to significantly cut NIH funding to universities in America. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about cuts to the National Institutes of Health on how they are affecting universities and research here in Illinois. My guests for this part of the show are Megan Zanies, senior reporter with the Chronicle of Higher Education, and Dr. Don Torrey, a PhD scientist and associate dean for research at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. You can join us today at 800-222-9455, especially if you or maybe someone you know has been affected by cuts at NIH or other federal agencies. Do you think these reductions are justified? And, you know, what federal agencies or programs would you seek to cut? 800-222-9455. We did ask our texting group about this. Chris in Rock Falls said, "I'm very fortunate that I do not rely on USAID or NIH for help. I think it's beyond unconscionable what's going on, and we are all at risk if they continue to be allowed to knock the wheels of our society." Gina in Springfield said, "Reduction of the workforce in the federal government can be made by raising the bar on qualifications for jobs. Poor performers with 2 or 3 official performance reviews can be appropriately fired. Trump's eliminating entire departments is worse than inappropriate. It's an intimidating demonstration of presidential power. It's very harmful to the smooth running of the U.S. government." So again, we are talking specifically in this part of the show about NIH funding and how it's, and before the break, while I was talking with Don Torrey, sorry, I had to interrupt you, for we were on a fixed clock here, but you were talking about direct funding, which pays for things like salaries, you know, chemicals or biological agents that's used in research, you know, equipment, that sort of thing. So what is indirect funding for, right? People maybe are sort of imagining the worst, you know, foosball table in the student lounge. What is meant by indirect funding?
Yes, so indirect funding, also called facilities and administrative costs, are funds that, as the name suggests, support the performance of research activities at institutions, but are not attributable to any one single project. And here at the School of Medicine, as well as at all other institutions that get federal funding, these pay for the utilities of the research buildings, maintenance and upkeep of our high-tech equipment, so that we have that equipment to be able to perform our experiments, computing, data management, infrastructure, also the security and handling of those chemicals and biologicals and proper waste disposal of those. And IP, intellectual property reporting to the federal government. We also have oversight and compliance requirements of federal regulations as well as state regulations, some local regulations, proper fiscal accounting of our expenses. And then more recently is export control measures that have been put into place. All of these require the experts and the time needed to review our processes and spending to make sure we're spending those direct dollars appropriately. It is the indirect dollars that funds those aspects of any research project that's going on at our institutions.
So, as we mentioned, the Trump administration wants to limit indirect funding to 15% of the scientific grant amount. How big of an effect would that have on SIU medicine?
I would say that the 15% is about a third of what our contract says that we should be getting for federal grants at the moment. So it's a sizable piece of money that we're going to have to really take a look at to see how we can function properly. We want to maintain our research. We at the School of Medicine and at other places feel as though research is a driving force of our medical universities. So we have to take a close look at that, and it's not going to be easy, to be honest.
You know, one of the things that the administration says is, well, you know, some of these private universities, you know, Yale, Harvard, the Ivy Leagues, they have these multi-billion dollar endowments. Is there a backstop like that at SIU?
Billions? Absolutely not. We would love to be in that position. That's not where SIU is. We're going to try to look at all of our funds available to see how we can fill this gap if this actually comes to pass, the 15% blanket IDC rate. We're hoping not, to be honest. I'm hoping for sure not, but this will take some, we'll have to do some looking in terms of how are we going to be able to fill that gap.
Megan Zanies with the Chronicle of Higher Education. You looked into funding some of the other universities around Illinois receive from the NIH. What did you find?
Yeah, so these are numbers crunched by my colleague Dan Bowman from Federal Data, but if you look at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, which is probably the biggest spender in the area in this realm, you're actually looking at in fiscal year 2024, it would amount to about a $14.6 million loss. Again, that's based on 2024 fiscal year numbers. Currently, UIUC actually gets 58.6% reimbursement. And going down to 15 would be obviously a significant reduction. On average, universities generally get 27 to 28% reimbursement rates, although some much, much higher, even in the 60s or 70s.
And I don't know if you can speak to, you know, Northern Illinois University, Illinois State, or there other schools. Obviously, we heard from Don Torrey at SIU School of Medicine.
Yeah, so Illinois State, Northern Illinois, those are significantly smaller numbers than you see at UIUC. Those are more on the order of $100,000 or so, little over that. So again, not quite the 14.6 million scale at UIUC, but certainly a significant impact for the researchers that are in the middle of projects there.
Yeah. All right, let me share another message we got from a listener. Jane in Pawnee wrote to say, do federal programs need surgery to minimize waste? Yes. Should that be done with a blunt axe? No. As a graduate student in science labs and as a retired state government employee, I've witnessed waste and misuse of precious federal grant funds. Our scientific researchers receive excellent training in their disciplines, but virtually none in budgets or in personnel, the tasks which take up much of their time. Yes, cuts are needed, but they should be made carefully to protect critical resources, including skilled, experienced employees, Jane says. She concludes, the Trump approach threatens to set back scientific research by years, perhaps by decades, at a time when the Chinese are increasing their support for research. Donald Torrey, talk about how, you know, there's been all this back and forth. It's really difficult to keep up with the news, what's happening in so many different areas of government. Is the money coming in? Is it not coming in? How big has an effect has all this confusion had on researchers at SIU?
That's an excellent point. It's one that's not discussed a lot, but it's very ironic for those of us at SIU. Just yesterday, we celebrated being designated an R1 research institution by the Carnegie Foundation, which only about 5% of universities nationwide can attain. And that's based on increasing research productivity as well as training productivity, training those scientists for the future. A milestone for SIU, and we're very happy with that. I'm so grateful for our faculty here that helped contribute to that. And then on the other side of it is the talk of decreasing IDC's support for research. It's left many of our faculty very uncertain. And to be honest, I'm worried about our ability to recruit new scientists into this field. And they can be graduate students, they can be medical students that are interested in research. Seeing this uncertainty, I'm worried about our ability to actually recruit those and retain those that we have to go into this field to keep our research progress going for medicine in general, and certainly for here at the SIU School of Medicine.
Megan, can you talk about that more broadly? I mean, this idea that a lack of NIH funding could affect, you know, whether universities can attract researchers at all. Where else are people going to go to do this work?
That's absolutely a concern I've heard from people at the national level. You know, you think about China has been mentioned several times in this program, but a number of other, you know, economies nationwide that are globally rather that would look to recruit either, you know, promising young researchers or even mid-career folks that are working on important biomedical research and maybe don't see themselves getting the support within the American research economy that they once did.
Don Torrey, talk about, so you mentioned this uncertainty in recruitment. That's a long-term challenge. What are some of the short-term considerations? Are there actual projects that are in process that may have to be shut down or too early to say, or how are you thinking about that?
Too early to say. We're not aware of any of our NIH-funded investigators that have had any funding pulled. For us, it's business as usual. We are getting those direct dollars, so we want our researchers to be active and continuing on their research trajectory on their grants. So we've not had any situations like USAID has had where funding was actually being pulled. I think our uncertainty is how are we going to support our investigators as best we can, given the cut in those indirect funds that help support them with their research projects.
I guess, so what's next? What, are you in a holding pattern now? Are you waiting on the you know, courts or the government? Where do things go from here?
We are here at SIU and at other places that we've talked with. And as Megan said, there is a hearing this coming Friday. Hopefully there'll be some more clarity there. As of right now, we're considering it business as usual and keep continuing on all the good things that we're doing here research-wise. And hopefully Friday we have some good news.
Megan, what about from your standpoint? Where are you watching for movement on this issue? I mean, is it courts? Is it going to have to be the Congress? Although, frankly, there hasn't been a lot of as much reaction as one might have expected in the past from the Republican majority in Congress. Where are you keeping your eyes?
I think, like Don said, well, watching this hearing on Friday to see what, if anything, comes of it. Certainly, there also has been talk about Congress's role in this. I mean, the primary legal argument being made in these lawsuits is that this funding cut, this cap, would go over Congress's head, that Congress is supposed to have the power to control appropriations to the NIH and to other agencies, and so that the NIH, theoretically, they argue, shouldn't be allowed to do this independently. So that's, you know, something that you're watching. Not quite sure whether or not Congress will intervene in this case, but I think more broadly, we're just looking at the implications for the American research enterprise as a whole. You know, this is research into things like cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, vaccines, all sorts of things that folks have said are really could have a detrimental impact on American public health, as well as we covered the Chronicle, the research enterprise, and just the state of what American research looks like.
Don Torrey, probably the last question. Do you think NIH, does it have problems that are worth addressing?
In terms of funding research?
Yeah, sure. Take it where you will.
I think there's there's always that discussion of the transparency of NIH and who gets funded. And at least from our perspective, those study sections, which I've sat on for a number of years, view each project on the significance, the innovation, and the merit of the science. So I personally have always felt that it did a good job of trying to fund those that have really, really good ideas, good projects, going to move that needle forward in terms of our knowledge base of biomedical research. We always would appreciate having more funds available to support RPIs, but all the PIs in biomedical research, no doubt that would be wonderful to have as well. I think the potential of cutting support for research will dramatically influence biomedical research, and make no mistake about it, I think eventually clinical care will be impacted as well, because these researchers that we have here and elsewhere are developing new ways to diagnose, treat, or even prevent different diseases, which is the scope of what NIH is trying to combat with their research as well.
Don Torrey is Associate Dean for Research at the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. Megan Zanies is a Senior Reporter with the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to preview Governor J.B. Pritzker's State of the State and budget address. At least some stations will be following through the noon hour, where we will have live coverage of that speech. That's all coming up tomorrow here on the 21st Show, which is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening, and we will talk with you again tomorrow.